Thank you for spending your Tuesday, the 17th of July, with KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves. It's been 60 years since a boat named Golden Rule sailed from San Pedro Harbor with an attempt to sail into the nuclear test zone in the Marshall Islands. Captained by former Navy commander Albert Bigelow, this journey was a protest against United States testing and deployment of nuclear weapons. It resulted in the crew's arrest and incarceration, but did not signal the end of the Golden Rule. The boat wound up at Fields Landing, and the sunken vessel, discovered in 2010, was restored and belongs to Veterans for Peace, Humboldt Bay Chapter 56, and was relaunched into Humboldt Bay in 2015. It's due back in Humboldt Bay this week for an extended visit. Albert Bigelow also played a prominent role in commissioning the writing of a play called Which Way the Wind, about the threat of nuclear weapons. It was performed widely until around 1960. This play will be the centerpiece of Against the Wind, a festival of events to promote peace and support the voyage of the Golden Rule. This week-long festival will take place in Arcata and other parts of Humboldt County, October 14th through the 21st. The Against the Wind Steering Committee brought the festival idea to Veterans for Peace and now operates under the nonprofit status of the Veterans for Peace Golden Rule Project, but otherwise is a separate entity from them. However, Against the Wind has committed to donating proceeds from the festival to the Golden Rule Project. I spoke with Against the Wind chairman Jack Irvine in June. I, and probably many listeners, are not as familiar as they would like to be with the boat named the Golden Rule. And is that how it began for you?
Yes, exactly. That's how it began for me. So let me just give you a little background information that brought me into this project. And that's really begins around 2010 when a boat sunk at the Fields Landing dock. And when that boat was brought up, it was a wreck. It had a huge hole punched in the hull, and they were really prepared to, the salvagers were prepared to burn that boat on the shoreline there. But Leroy Zerlang, who had helped with the resurrection of the boat, decided to look at it and just see what it was, and it turned out it was the boat Golden Rule. Now, Golden Rule has a storied history behind it. It was the first peace boat. In 1958, a Boston-born architect, peace activist, son of an important Boston family by the name of Albert Bigelow, had purchased a boat, which he then renamed the Golden Rule, and he attempted in 1958 to sail that boat into the Marshall Islands to protest above-ground U.S. nuclear testing. He did this with widespread publicity. He announced all of his plans. There's no secret about that. On his way from San Pedro Harbor in Los Angeles, the Atomic Energy Commission and the Department of Justice created a law that made it illegal for Americans to sail into the nuclear test zone. So when he got to Honolulu, he was served with an injunction saying that's not allowed. Twice he and his crew attempted to sail to the Marshall Islands. Both times their boat was intercepted by the Coast Guard. They were boarded by the Coast Guard, arrested, and returned to Honolulu. The first time after their arrest, they were released on bail. The second time, they were jailed and tried and sentenced to 6 months. That boat, Bigelow sells when he leaves Honolulu, but he continues his anti-nuclear, anti-war, and peace activism when he returns to the United States. In 1959, he writes a book called The Voyage of the Golden Rule, which details his journey. He He also is working very closely with the Quakers to carry on his anti-nuclear activities. And they decide, the Quakers and Bigelow, to write a play about the dangers of nuclear weapons. They enlist the help of a man named Philip Lewis, who writes a play called Which Way the Wind. Bigelow plays a very important role in that. He financially supports it. He works closely with Lewis. And in 1959, he plays the role of the narrator in that play as it travels and is performed on both coasts. It travels again in 1960, but Bigelow is not part of that tour. He continues his life as an anti-war activist, a peace advocate, and he has a large career as a civil rights advocate. In 1960, he's on one of the first buses of civil rights advocates who travels into the South, headed toward New Orleans to protest segregation. In, I think, North Carolina, he and John Lewis are hauled off the bus. He is beaten badly, as is Lewis. He protects Lewis. And he has a storied career in civil rights activism as well. That play, Which Way the Wind, has never been performed since 1960. So I had the idea that it would be perhaps useful for us and would help support the mission of the Golden Rule if we restage that play. So I got a copy of the play. I read the play. I thought it was a very powerful statement. I then showed it to Bonnie Messenger, who's an actor and a former Humboldt State instructor. She also thought the play was very good. She suggested I show it to John Heckel, who's a retired theater arts professor at Humboldt and director. He also thought the play was very good. So at that point, the three of us began meeting and talking about how we could bring this off. As we read through the play together, separately and then together, we also recognized that it touched on much larger themes of nonviolence, social justice, racism, as well as anti-war. At that point, in our minds, the project began to expand some, and we brought on additional people onto the steering committee, adding Peter Aronson, who is a member of the Veterans for Peace, longstanding peace advocate, and who had a role in the resurrection and rehabilitation of the Golden Rule boat. Jane Hill, who has had a long career as an executive director of opera companies, including the Eureka Symphony, came on board. And then Peter Pennekamp as well, who formed Center Arts many years ago and who worked for NPR and had a executive director role at the Humboldt Area Foundation, all became part of this project. We then moved ahead with renting the Arcata Playhouse for the week of in October.
You also have Amy Uecki.
Oh, sorry.
And
so much.
Artist Amy Uecki.
Yep, filmmaker and artist.
And years ago, I spoke with her about a project she was working on. It had to do with relatives of hers who were in internment camps.
Yes, indeed. And she's more recently worked with Marianne Pennekamp in telling her story of escaping from Nazi Germany in an animated film. It's a very powerful film as well about her life. I forgot to mention that in 2015, the Golden Rule was relaunched into Humboldt Bay. So it's now continuing its mission of promoting peace and advocating for nuclear disarmament. Currently, it's in Southern California, but is returning to Humboldt Bay in mid-July and will be here from mid-July to the end of August when it returns to Southern California. And then it's going to retrace its journey across the Pacific, first heading to Honolulu and then into the Marshall Islands, onto Okinawa, to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to arrive there in August of 2020 for the 75th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Who is the owner of Golden Rule?
It's owned by the Veterans for Peace, Local 56. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And again, back to the start of the development of a festival of this type, which includes, you know, some of these elements that we're talking about, you know, the play in particular. Are you interested on an ongoing basis in local history? Or just remind me again how you found the Golden Rule, how you found yourself involved in its saga.
Yeah, so I became interested in the Golden Rule. And from the looking at the history of the Golden Rule, I got onto Albert Bigelow. And in researching his history, I found the play.
How did you get interested in the Golden Rule to begin with?
Just knowing about its presence, I was intrigued by the story of it being just found sunk, almost burned, turning into be this historic boat that's under then Veterans for Peace, both Garberville and Humboldt Bay, undertake the restoration of the boat with a bunch of volunteers. They work for 5 years on the restoration. The boat's then being restored at Fairhaven, and then the relaunching. It's in that time frame that I become interested in this, in trying to understand the history better and who the people were who were involved in this.
And so with the steering committee, you've planned a festival that you're currently raising funds to support the goals of this festival, because this festival has a lot of different things that are going to be going on, lectures, performances, film, the play, which will be directed by John Heckel. But it's interesting about the timing of this because we recently there was, and I'm going to be careful how I refer to this because I'm not really going to call it an anti-nuclear summit, but I guess it was promoted as such with the president and the North Korean leader, if the issue was nuclear or nuclear disarmament. And then you bring
trying
this
to create a nuclear-free Korean peninsula, sure.
And then I did not even know about the Golden Rule at this time, and you and I hadn't spoken yet.
Correct.
And so timing, really. I mean,
there's a bunch of other things going on internationally also. You will recall that the International Committee Against Nuclear Weapons, the ICAN, received the Nobel Peace Prize in 2017. That was a recognition, I think, by the Nobel Committee of how dangerous the world situation is becoming. Also, the Bulletin for the Atomic Scientists in January of 2018 moved the doomsday clock to 2 minutes to midnight. Now, that is hasn't been done since 1953. It's a recognition by them of the dangers that are appearing internationally around the issues of nuclear weapons. The U.S. is refining and sophisticating their nuclear weapons. They have proposed that nuclear weapons can be used in tactical means in warfare. We have leaders around the world who are potentially very dangerous. North Korea for one, leaders of two major nations for others. I think those are really challenging times. And I don't think that there's great public awareness of the dangers of nuclear war as much as they should be.
It came on a hot, clear, sunny morning. For the first time in history, a mutual anxiety mortal on Earth came on a hot, still morning exactly at 8:15. At exactly 15 minutes past 8 in the morning on August 6, 1945, those are the words beginning John Hersey's report called Hiroshima. He tells us, Mrs. Hatsuya Nakamura, a widow, had been watching her three small sleeping children. They had been up most of the night because of the air raid warnings, all of them false. Dr. Terafumi Sasaki, 25 years old, in the city's Red Cross Hospital, had just drawn a specimen of blood from the arm of a patient and was on his way up to the third floor lab. There had been an air raid warning half an hour ago, but the radar had detected only three planes, obviously a reconnaissance. The planes were approaching, but it seemed safe to let the people go about their business. The planes were coming, but at 8 o'clock they sounded the all clear. A beautiful morning, a clear sky. Now, it is almost exactly 8:15.
almost nobody remembered hearing it. The flash, though, they remembered. Like a sheet of sun.
In a flash, 60% of the homes destroyed completely. In a flash, 100,000 killed. The rest, walking about, bleeding from heads, chests, and backs. Eyebrows gone, burned from their faces. That flash, that second of heat, had cooked the potatoes in the ground. And when the screams began...
The thing I remember most was how they told me the people, because of the pain, walked dumbly with their hands raised as though carrying. I remember that gesture whenever I remember that interview with the president. Oh, Mr. President, you were the one that had to make the decision to use the atom bomb back in 1945. Have you regretted it?
Not a bit. Saved American lives.
I ask you, General, if we got into nuclear war now in the 1960s, and our Air Force made an assault with nuclear weapons, what would be the result in the way of death?
Well, Senator, current planning estimates run in the order of several hundred million deaths. That could be either way, depending on which way the wind blew.
That was the trailer to Which Way the Wind, a 1963 film made of the Philip Lewis play of the same name. Golden Rule Commander Albert Bigelow had played a prominent role in the commissioning of the 1959 play. I'm Wendy Butler, and you're listening to Art Waves. My guest is Against the Wind Festival Steering Committee Chairman Jack Irvine. The Against the Wind Festival, to be held in October, will include a staging of the play Which Way the Wind, directed by John Heckel. The festival events will also include lectures, a film night, an evening of social protest music, and other art projects. Here's Jack Irvine.
So part of our purpose is to talk about the historic role of the Golden Rule, the Bigelow's history, but also to talk about nuclear arms, nuclear armaments, what they mean to this planet. It's a much more pressing danger than global warming. It's something that could happen instantaneously. It's like in a moment rather than in generations. So as we also thought about the themes that I've touched on, we have, as you said, created a whole program around the play. The play is still the centerpiece, but on that week of October 14th through the 21st, we have a night of protest music, which we're calling The Power of Protest. That's organized by Patrick Cleary and Sienna Nelson. They're going to engage local groups, musical groups, two 45-minute sets. They will introduce each song, who wrote that song, who first performed the song, the historic context in which the song was created. And on Tuesday night, we're working on putting together a panel discussion that will involve Lawrence Wintner, who I'll speak about a little bit later as well, Robert Gould, who's the past president of the Physicians for Social Responsibility nationally, and who's the current president in the San Francisco Bay Area Physicians for Social Responsibility. On Wednesday night, we're going to have film night. We're going to be showing three films, including a film called 24 Hours After Hiroshima, which is produced by National Geographic. That will be followed by an analysis and comments by, again, Robert Gould, and an interaction with the audience. And then we're going to, later that evening, show Dr. Strangelove. On Thursday night, Lawrence Wintner, who's a retired professor of history from State University New York, Albany, will be here, and he'll be lecturing at the Cape Buchanan Rule about the role of the Golden Rule in the national and international anti-nuclear movement. He has written a three-volume work called Struggle Against the Bomb, which is a history of the international anti-nuclear movement, and a smaller one-volume work called Confronting the Bomb. He's a world expert on the anti-nuclear movement and peace movement in general. And then on Friday night and Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, we'll be performing the play at the Arcata Playhouse with local actors and, as you said, with John Heckel doing the directing of that play.
And then I also see that Amy is coordinating art and poetry projects with plans on doing that with local high school students.
Yes, we've reached out to all the local high schools and the art teachers and maybe even hope to engage some of the English teachers in having students engage in creating art around the themes of the program, poster art and just art in general, and perhaps even creating poetry, which we can then, the art we can display at the Arcata Playhouse and perhaps have the students reading their poetry at a reception in the afternoon on one of those days that we have the Arcata Playhouse rented. So that's the goal. That's not quite solid yet, but we're working on that through the summer.
And so at this point, the steering committee is meeting frequently.
We've met every couple of weeks, probably now for closing in on a year, and the project is just be evolving and the pieces falling together. And probably in January or February, we rented the playhouse for the week of October, recognizing it was still going to take us time to put all this together.
And so if people want to find out more information or make a donation, they can go to your website. Is that a good place to start?
We have a website. That's www.againstthewindfestival.org. You may also get to that website by going to www.whichwaywind.org, or you can contact me directly. That's Jack Irvine at 839-8676. That's my home phone. Any one of those ways of gaining contact, and my name is in the telephone book, so it's for those people who still use telephone books, it's a way of getting in touch with me as well.
Well, speaking of people like me as well who continue to use phone books, but my husband was, but I wasn't living at a time when in our schools, children were run through nuclear drills where they were told to get under their desks and hold on. Did you undergo that?
I did. So I was born in 1942. So it was in the 50s. And, there were neighbors of mine building bomb shelters in the Bay Area at the same time. And nuclear drills were common in the schools, in grammar school anyway, at that time.
It's interesting. Why do you think when that sort of thing was occurring, why are we not hearing about it now to that extent when there are even more powers with nuclear capabilities?
I think there are a lot of reasons, and there are probably more that I can even identify. But, above ground and then underground nuclear testing and the dramatic arms race through the 50s and the Cold War played a huge role. There have been no nuclear bombs since 1945, and there's been no, I guess the closest threat was in 1963 over the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I think people have been lulled into some degree of complacency that this deterrent of both sides being so hugely armed with nuclear weapons is a protection, perhaps. So I think those things at least play some role in dulling our awareness of the risks. They did sign, most nations signed a partial nuclear test ban treaty also in 1963. That in part was the result of worldwide anti-nuclear demonstrations. It really pushed governments across the world to create that nuclear test ban, a partial nuclear test ban treaty. The more comprehensive nuclear test ban treaty of 1996 has never been ratified by the United States. And we are again gearing up for modernizing, quote unquote, our nuclear power. I think we live in dangerous times. That's all, I think.
And then finally, you know, as we go forward toward the festival in October, what you mentioned it briefly, but just in closing, what do you want people to take away from this kind of week-long event?
I think we have two primary, if you will, two major goals. One is to really retell the history of the Golden Rule, Bigelow, and the mission of the Golden Rule, and why that's important historically and contemporarily, and to help support their mission. Secondly, for sure, is educating our community about the risks of nuclear arms and nuclear war, and to give them a message of hopefulness at the end of that. What can we as individuals do to deal with this threat? And we want to come out of this with a message of hopefulness to the audience and to our community. And I think that you will, if you participate, you will find that all of the events give a spirit of hopefulness at the end.
Jack Irvine, a steering committee chairman of the Against the Wind Festival, scheduled for October 14th through the 21st. The festival proceeds will be contributed to the Veterans for Peace Golden Rule Project. A reminder, the Golden Rule is due back in Humboldt Bay this week for an extended stay. For more information about the Against the Wind Festival or the Golden Rule Project, you can visit againstthewindfestival.org or whichwaywind.org. Or you can phone Jack Irvine at 707-839-8676. That's Art Waves. Join me for the next regular broadcast, Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Listen anytime online at khsu.org. You can download podcasts of the program from iTunes. I'm Wendy Butler. Until next time, thanks for listening.